Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Tuesday, March 4th, the bishops of Latin America and the Caribbean thank the U.S. Church for their support in assisting migrants. And Arab leaders meet in Cairo to discuss Egypt's counter-proposal to Trump's Gaza transformation plan. But first, a brief update on the Pope's health as he continues to receive treatment in hospital for bilateral pneumonia. In the Vatican, I'm Francesca Merlo. The Pope slept through the night and now continues to rest, said the Holy See Press Office on Tuesday morning. The press office has reported that the Pope is continuing his respiratory therapy and physiotherapy and has resumed high-flow ventilation using a nasal cannula for oxygen. Tuesday morning was devoted to rest and prayer. In the context of a complex condition, the situation currently appears stable. Today, Pope Francis's prayer intention for the month of March was revealed, focusing on families in crisis. In this month's edition of the Pope video, the Holy Father calls on the Church to join in prayer for this intention. Recorded before his recent hospitalization, the Pope's message emphasizes that no family is without challenges, yet through forgiveness and love, all families can find strength to move forward. Deborah Castellano-Lubov reports.
Pope Francis's monthly prayer intention this March is for families in crisis. The Pope invited the Church to pray for this intention in this month's The Pope video, which is entrusted to the entire Catholic Church through the Pope's Worldwide Prayer Network. The images in the video were prepared prior to the Holy Father's arrival at Rome's Gemelli Hospital on February 14th, where he continues his therapy for bilateral pneumonia. In the Pope video for March, the Holy Father acknowledged the great difficulties facing families. We all dream about a beautiful, perfect family, but Pope Francis recognized there's no such thing as a perfect family. For each family, he noted, has its own problems as well as its tremendous joys. While every member of the family is important because each is unique, the Pope lamented how often their differences cause conflict and painful wounds, as he suggested a solution. The best medicine to heal the pain of a wounded family, he stressed, is forgiveness, adding that forgiveness requires giving our family members another chance. God, Pope Francis pointed out, does this with us all the time. Reminding that God's patience is infinite, the Holy Father reminded how he forgives us, lifts us up, and gives us a new start. In the same way, the Pope suggested pardoning one another always renews the family and makes it look forward with hope. Even when there's no possibility of the happy ending we'd like, he noted, God's grace gives us the strength to forgive. Doing so, he explained, brings peace because it frees us from sadness and, above all, from resentment. Pope Francis concluded by saying, let us pray that broken families might discover the cure for their wounds through forgiveness, rediscovering each other's gifts, and even in their differences. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
A statement issued on the 4th of March by the Presidency of the Commission of the Bishops' Conferences of the European Union stresses that Ukraine's struggle for peace will also be decisive for the fate of Europe and the world. The message reaffirms the EU bishops' continued support of Ukraine and its people, who have been suffering from Russia's unjustifiable full-scale invasion for more than 3 years. It also challenges the international community to establish a comprehensive, just and lasting peace in the country, which it states can only be achieved through negotiations which include Ukraine. Kelsey Gussie reports.
The March 4th statement shares the Commission of the Bishops' Conferences of the European Union's ongoing prayers for those who have died, those who are wounded or fighting for their country, and those who have been displaced as a result of the war in Ukraine. It also expresses gratitude to the EU decision makers for providing unprecedented humanitarian, political, economic, financial, as well as military support to Ukraine, More than simply describing their sentiment, the bishops highlight how the fate of Ukraine will extend far beyond its borders and instead affect the entire world. The bishops call on the EU to remain united in their commitment to supporting Ukraine and its people. Following the third anniversary of Russia's full-scale invasion, the commission labels the attack as a blatant violation of international law and points out that the acts committed against civilians during this time demand a consequent pursuit of justice and accountability. This would come in the form of a comprehensive, just, and lasting peace in the country. The statement explains this can only be achieved through negotiations, supported by global solidarity and including Ukraine in discussions. Peace must be in accordance with international law and must create the needed environment to allow Ukrainian families to reunite and to live a life of dignity, security, and freedom in their sovereign and independent homeland. Yet the bishops also stress the importance of protecting the rights of all communities, including the Russian-speaking minority. This should be part of the reconstruction of Ukraine's infrastructure, and the statement of the EU bishops states Russia, the aggressor, must adequately participate in this effort. The bishops do not shy away from encouraging the EU to move forward with adding Ukraine as a member state in a timely and fair manner. The Commission of EU Bishops express its hope that the European Union will continue to live its vocation as a promoter of peace and an anchor of stability to its neighborhood and to the entire world. I'm Kelsey Gussie.
Moving on, Ukraine said on Tuesday it would do all it can to maintain its ties with the United States after President Donald Trump paused military aid to Kyiv in the most dramatic step yet in his pivot towards closer ties with Russia. Trump has upended U.S. policy on Ukraine and Russia, culminating in an explosive confrontation at the White House on Friday when Trump upbraided President Volodymyr Zelensky for being insufficiently grateful for Washington's backing. Meanwhile, the Latin American and Caribbean Episcopal Council, or SALAM, has written a letter to the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, USCCB. In the letter, SALAM thanks the USCCB for its support and expresses gratitude to the Church in the United States for its efforts in assisting migrants, as Christopher Wells tells us.
The Latin American and Caribbean Episcopal Council, SALAM, has written a letter to the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops expressing closeness and solidarity in light of the country's evolving migration policies. In the letter addressed to Archbishop Timothy Broglio, the president of the USCCB, the bishops write that the people of Latin America and the Caribbean embody an identity shaped over five centuries, forged by the contributions of both the region's indigenous inhabitants and the millions of men and women who arrived either freely or through hardship and suffering. The message continues: for years, many Latin Americans and Caribbeans have been forced to leave their homelands, displaced by violence and a lack of opportunities, in search of a better life. The United States remains one of the main destinations for those undertaking the painful journey of uprooting themselves in pursuit of human development, something our own governments have too often failed to provide. SALAM also acknowledges the vital role played by the U.S. Church, expressing gratitude for the longstanding support offered to our brothers and sisters arriving in your country, welcoming them into communities, providing spiritual guidance, and assisting with both immediate needs and pathways to economic stability. Finally, the statement says that the Church in Latin America further reaffirms its commitment to standing in solidarity with migrants, pledging to work together both to support those who wish to remain in their home countries, affirming their right not to migrate, and those who must leave in order to protect their lives and secure a future for their families. I'm Christopher Wells.
U.S. President Donald Trump has announced that a 25% tariff on imports from Mexico and Canada will come into effect at midnight tonight on Tuesday. James Blears reports on the potential impact this will have on trilateral trade.
The one-month spell of grace will dissolve into a Halloween-style pumpkin at midnight tonight. Mexico sent 10,000 National Guard to the border with the United States to further stem undocumented migration, while Canada's appointed a fentanyl czar to tackle this illegal narcotics issue. But it's not been enough to convince or persuade the Trump administration to relent. Washington also looks set to further raise tariffs on China, which has already been hit with a 10% increase on its goods bound for the United States. For Mexico and Canada, it's signals and signifies the death knell of the once famed North American Free Trade Agreement. It's likely that both countries will retaliate and impose their own reciprocal tariffs on U.S. goods as an in-kind, unkind response. The time for fluidity or 12th-hour wiggle room maneuverability appears to have already expired and fizzled out. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum publicly declared that Mexico must be respected. She also insisted cooperation and coordination, but subordination never. Whatever his decision, we will make ours. There is a plan and there is unity in Mexico. This hard-line, hard-edged policy could encourage U.S. manufacturers to stay closer to home and not stray to pastures greener, which temptingly offer more verdant and generous tax breaks, yet it'll also push up inflation and could affect Mexico's willingness to accept tens of thousands of illegal migrants who President Trump wants to deport. Tough responses will follow hard-nosed decisions. As the saying goes, there's no room for sentiment in big business. For Vatican Radio, James Burr's reporting.
And finally, turning to the Middle East, Foreign Minister Gideon Saar said on Tuesday Israel was ready to proceed to the second phase of the Gaza ceasefire deal as long as Hamas was ready to release more of the 59 hostages it is still holding. Fighting in Gaza has been halted since January 19th under a truce arranged with US support and Qatari and Egyptian mediators. Meanwhile, Arab leaders are meeting in Cairo to discuss the adoption of Egypt's counterproposal to US President Trump's call for the Gaza Strip to be depopulated and transformed into a beach destination. As Linda Baldoni reports, they are also discussing an alternative plan.
The summit is hosted by Egyptian President Abdel Gattah el-Sisi and attended by regional leaders, including Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, whose support is crucial for any post-war project. Discussions will reportedly include a plan according to which Palestinians would be relocated to safe areas inside Gaza, equipped with mobile homes and shelters while its cities are rebuilt, while Hamas would cede power to an interim administration of political independence until a reformed Palestinian authority can assume control. The initiative follows the US president's suggestion last month to resettle Gaza's roughly 2 million residents in other countries, while the United States would take ownership of the war-ravaged territory and redevelop it into a Middle Eastern Riviera. Meanwhile, as Israeli military continue to launch strikes in the West Bank, the Israeli foreign minister said on Tuesday that his government is ready to proceed to the second phase of the Gaza ceasefire deal as long as Hamas was ready to release more of the 59 hostages it is still holding. Fighting in Gaza has been halted since January the 19th under a truce arranged with US support and Qatari and Egyptian mediators. And Hamas has since exchanged 33 Israeli hostages and 5 Thai nationals for some 2,000 Palestinian prisoners and detainees. But the initial 42-day truce has expired and Israel has blocked the entry of food, fuel, medicine and other supplies to Gaza to try to get Hamas to accept a new proposal, warning of additional consequences and raising fears of a return to war. I'm Linda Baldoni.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, please visit vaticannews.va. Many thanks today go to Daniele Giorgi, our sound engineer in studio. From the Vatican, until next time, I'm Francesca Merlo.